Next is a meeting with disciples on November 18th, 1991 in Vrindavan.
One of my godbrothers, who's an initiating spiritual master, asked me what I was discussing in these disciples meetings. So I began to remember them, the ones we've been having. And I hope that you remember them also, although some of you may not have been to all the meetings. The first meeting we had, the first meeting we had, we were talking about coming to Vrindavan on a pilgrimage, and what we would try to derive from the visit, and how to keep Vrindavan in your heart when you leave Vrindavan. And one particular discussion I remember also was, we were talking about service as an occupation, in addition to devotional service in the main practices of chanting and hearing, we all have some kind of occupational activity that we do, and how that's important, and how it should be pursued and found, and so on. And then I asked you to just prepare questions for me, and we're answering all kinds of questions. We do so much hearing every day, hearing in class. So you should also make some attempt to remember it, and go over it, evaluate it, and then act on it. Ravanam, kirtanam, then remembering it, Vishnu Smaranam. So, today I wanted to discuss, read, and talk about Krishna in Vrindavan, in Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna in Vrindavan, in Srimad Bhagavatam, is of course in the 10th canto. But there's a nice section in the third canto in Uddhava's talks, chapter 2 it is, called Remembrance of Lord Krishna. In which, in brief, he tells about Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes and all the pastimes out in the chapter after Remembrance of Lord Krishna is called Lord's Pastimes Out of Vrindavan. So Uddhava is one of the greatest devotees of Krishna, and he's with Krishna in Dwarka, but he has a special connection with Vrindavan because he went to Vrindavan and saw how the residents of Vrindavan worshipped Krishna. Then he became the Shiksha Guru of the gopis while simultaneously being their student. And he helped them to remember the pastimes of Krishna, and he finally aspired to be such a servant of the gopis that he prayed to become some insignificant grass in Vrindavan that the gopis could walk on him, and he could get the dust from the lotus feet. So although he's not a Vrindavan Vasi, Vajrabasi, he's a very great appreciator of Vrindavan and wishes to enter Vrindavan. And there's a place in Vrindavan, what is it called, Uddhava Giri? Where the actual place is there where he was and spoke. So this begins when Vidura was on pilgrimage and approached Uddhava and asked him different questions, specifically about Krishna. When the great devotee Uddhava was asked by Vidura to speak on the messages of the dearest Lord Krishna, Uddhava was unable to answer immediately due to excessive anxiety at the remembrance of the Lord. He was one who, even in his childhood, at the age of 5 years, was so absorbed in the service of Lord Krishna that when he was called by his mother for morning breakfast, he did not wish to have it. This is a nice purport for parents, if you want to take note of this. Where Prabhupada says how important it is to raise your children from the very beginning in Krishna consciousness. And he says that it's a sign of a nitya siddha, liberated soul, that from the very first symptoms of childhood, he has an instinct to serve Lord Krishna. At least it means from the previous life that the person was cultivating Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada ends his purport by saying that he too had this advantage of playing with dolls of Radha, like Rama and Krishna. In Prabhupada's case, he had Radha Krishna murtis at a very young age. Uddhava thus served the Lord continually from childhood, and in his old age that attitude of service never slackened. As soon as he was asked about the message of the Lord, he at once remembered all about him. This purport is also memorable to create enthusiasm as you approach old age. Because he says Uddhava was very enthusiastic as a boy, but when he became an old man, he was even more enthusiastic. There was no idea of retiring or feeling tired. This is a sign of pure devotional service. For a moment, he remained dead silent and his body did not move. He became absorbed in the nectar of remembering the Lord's lotus feet in devotional ecstasy, and he appeared to be going increasingly deeper into that ecstasy. It was so observed by Vidura that Uddhava had all the transcendental bodily changes due to total ecstasy, and he was trying to wipe away tears of separation from his eyes. Thus Vidura could understand that Uddhava had completely assimilated extensive love for the Lord. The great devotee, Uddhava, soon came back from the abode of the Lord to the human plane, and wiping his eyes, he awakened his reminiscence of the past and spoke to Vidura in a pleasing mood. One thing this shows, aside from the extraordinary state that Uddhava was in, going from one world to the other, was that he desired to come to this world to share his reminiscence of Krishna with a qualified devotee. As pleasurable as it was to be lost in the ocean of love for Krishna, which in one sense was incommunicable, yet devotees like Uddhava, they want to try to communicate what they can to a qualified audience. So this is a preaching spirit. And Krishna is very pleased with this. Rather than one only enjoy transcendental emotions for oneself, so it may be that what you enjoy as a very advanced devotee, you really couldn't convey to another person, especially to a neophyte. And therefore it would seem to be much more preferable not to try to do that. But the pleasure is so great of giving something of Krishna consciousness, of giving a chance of Krishna consciousness to people who are otherwise in blindness, that the devotee is willing to give up his own samadhi of internal reminiscence. And of course, that's what Srila Prabhupada did in leaving Radha-Damodar temple and coming to the West. What could he tell us about Krishna? He couldn't tell us the depth of his own Krishna consciousness, but he was so pleased to act as an agent for Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Sona Saraswati Thakur, to tell people about Krishna, that he took pleasure in taking himself out of Vrindavan and trying to tell people about Krishna. And when a devotee does that, Krishna will protect his internal meditation also. But it's said that when an Uttama Adhikari does preach like that, he has to adjust himself and go to the Madhyam Adhikari platform in order to preach whatever can be communicated to people. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Vidura, the sun of the world, Lord Krishna, has set, and our house has now been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare? This universe with all its planets is most unfortunate, and even more unfortunate are the members of the Yadu dynasty, because they could not identify Lord Hari as the personality of Godhead any more than the fish could identify the moon." And now he begins his reminiscences. Actually, he doesn't speak in a completely exact order of time sequence at first, but just it's almost as if whatever waves come to the surface, he says something about Krishna as in the Yadu dynasty, and then he remembers Krishna at the Rajasuya sacrifice, which is near the end of his pastimes, and then he remembers Krishna with the gopis. But after a while, then he settles down to a more orderly presentation. The damsels of Braja, after pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, and thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. I wanted to read Prabhupada's purport to this verse about Krishna and the gopis. This is a topic, Krishna and the gopis, that attracts everyone who has got any connection with Krishna, including those who are not really devotees, but have a sensational interest because of the apparent romantic attitude of Krishna and the gopis, which is like material romance, and it attracts most advanced devotees. So there are many ways that this is expressed, and in Prabhupada's writing, it's very pleasing the way he writes in quite his own style. This isn't the only passage that he's written, but I was reading it today and attracted to what he gets across, speaking of this idea of communicating, a person who has deep feelings and trying to communicate some of it. What Prabhupada communicates and what you feel coming, the reservoir of feelings that he has, that he's drawing from, it's very attractive. We get a real strong feeling of love between Krishna and the gopis, and yet he does it without going too much into all the amorous details, but certainly not dry or purport. In his boyhood at Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was notorious as a teasing friend in transcendental love to all the girls his age. His love for them was so intense that there is no comparison to that ecstasy. And the damsels of Braja were so much attached to him that their affection excelled that of the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. Lord Krishna finally admitted his defeat before the transcendental affection of the gopis and declared that he was unable to repay them for their unalloyed affection. Although the gopis were seemingly anguished by the Lord's teasing behavior, when Krishna would leave them, they could not tolerate the separation and used to follow him with their eyes and minds. They were so stunned by the situation that they could not finish their household duties. No one could excel him even in the dealing of love exchanged between boys and girls. It is said in the revealed scriptures that Lord Krishna personally never goes beyond the boundary of Vrindavan. He remains there eternally because of the transcendental love of the inhabitants. Thus, even though he is not visible at present, he is not away from Vrindavan for a moment. Here's some of the childhood pastimes. I looked at this during our Krishna book course, sometimes for background and for additional material in the purports. And it's like a mini version of the Krishna book. In his childhood, the Almighty Lord was surrounded by cowherd boys and calves, and thus he traveled on the shore of the Yamuna River, through gardens densely covered with trees and filled with vibrations of chirping birds. Prabhupada in the purport talks about Krishna's cowherd boyfriends and who didn't care to know that Krishna was God, but knew him as their most intimate and lovable friend. They were so fond of the Lord that at night they would only think of the next morning when they would be able to meet the Lord and go together to the forest for cowherding. The forests on the shore of the Yamuna are all beautiful gardens, full of trees of mango, jackfruit, apples, guava, oranges, grapes, berries, palm fruit, and so many other plants and fragrant flowers. And because the forest was on the bank of the Yamuna, naturally there were ducks, cranes, and peacocks on the branches of the trees. All these trees and birds and beasts were pious living entities born in the transcendental abode of Vrindavan, just to give pleasure to the Lord and his eternal associates, the cowherd boys. The land of Vrindavan, the Lord's childhood playground, still remains today, and anyone who visits these places enjoys the same transcendental bliss, although the Lord is not physically visible to our imperfect eyes. Lord Chaitanya recommended this land of the Lord as identical with the Lord and therefore worshipable by the devotees. This instruction is taken up especially by the followers of Lord Chaitanya, known as the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And because the land is identical with the Lord, devotees like Uddhava and Vidura visited these places 5,000 years ago in order to have direct contact with the Lord, visible or not visible. This morning we were reading from Prabhupada's purport about imperceptibly liberated. So similarly, when you go around Vrindavan, you're imperceptibly in touch with Krishna in the holy Dham. As he says here, direct contact with Krishna, visible or not visible. Thousands of devotees of the Lord are still wandering in these sacred places of Vrindavan, and all of them are preparing themselves to go back home, back to Godhead. When the Lord displayed his activities, just suitable for childhood, he was only visible to the residents of Vrindavan. Sometimes he would cry and sometimes laugh just like a child, and while so doing, he would appear like a lion cub. So this is a picture of Vatsalya Rasa. How the different residents see Krishna. So the parents, they see Krishna as a human-like child. If anyone, Prabhupada writes, if anyone wants to enjoy the childhood pastimes of the Lord, he has to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Brajavasi, like Nanda, Upananda, and other parental inhabitants. This is the doctrine that's stated in Nectar Devotion as Raghunuga Bhakti practice, the following footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan who are in the mood of serving Krishna that you want to be in. So we know Krishna has two parents, but actually he has many parents. And how do they see Krishna? A child may insist on having something and cry like anything to get it, disturbing the whole neighborhood. And then immediately after achieving the desired thing, he laughs. Such crying and laughing is enjoyable to the parents and elderly members of the family. So the Lord would simultaneously cry and laugh in this way and merge his devotee parents in the humor of transcendental pleasure. These incidents are enjoyable only by the residents of Vraja. Child Krishna did not belong only to his parents, Nanda and Yasoda, but he was the son of all the elderly inhabitants of Vrindavan and the friend of all contemporary boys and girls. Everyone loved Krishna. He was the life and soul of everyone, including the animals, the cows, and the calves. There's nothing to compare this to if we try to compare it. Anyone being so popular and so loved that whether you're part of his family or not, he's the most important person in your family. So there's no second example, so we just have to hear about Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan to understand how a whole village, and actually it's the whole spiritual world of liberated associates, they all are centered on Krishna. In particular rasas, all the parental rasas, all the parental devotees, they all see Krishna as their child. All the gopis, they all see Krishna as their lover. And because he's omnipotent, he manages to satisfy each and every devotee on an individual basis at different times, so that they think, I'm the only one who's sitting and having lunch with Krishna, who's dancing with Krishna in the rasa dance, and who's giving Krishna my breast milk. And I'm the only tree that Krishna is sitting under. I'm the only cow that he's embracing. While herding the very beautiful bulls, the Lord, who was the reservoir of all opulence and fortune, used to blow his flute, and thus he enlivened his faithful followers, the cowherd boys. The great wizards, who were able to assume any form, were engaged by the king of Boja, Kamsa, to kill Krishna. But in the course of his pastimes, the Lord killed them as easily as a child breaks dolls. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were perplexed by great difficulties because a certain portion of the Yamuna was poisoned by the chief of the reptiles, Kaliya. The Lord chastised the snake king within the water and drove him away. And after coming out of the river, he caused the cows to drink the water and proved that the water was again in its natural state. So we're hearing this according to our capacity. In the audience, along with Vidura, as Vidura speaks. But it's up to us individually to be able to hear nicely. I was reading Lord Chaitanya's talks with Ramananda Roy, chapter 8 of Madhya Lila. And at the end, very end, Prabhupada talks about faithful hearing. Actually, Lord Chaitanya reveals to Ramananda Roy that he's Krishna. And not only Krishna, but he's given up his black form and he's become a golden because he's taken the attitude of Radharani, although he's Krishna. He wants to know what is the sweetness of Radha Krishna. So then, after showing this to Ramananda Roy, Lord Chaitanya, then we come to Sannyasi, and he says, "Don't tell anyone what you've seen. They'll think that I'm a madman, or you're a madman too." Then Prabhupada comments that, or rather, Krishnadas Kaviraj says, "We can only understand the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya when we hear with faith, not by argument." So it's not that by building a logical argument we can come to the conclusion that we shall worship Krishna in Vrindavan. You can make an argument for it, but that's not, that may be supportive for some discussion or something. But we don't hear based on, and we're not convinced by a logical deductive method, but by revelation, by serving the Guru, by Krishna's allowing us to develop faith. So at every stage, in the beginning and then later, when you're at the stage of Ramananda Rai, you proceed not as scholars, and certainly not as Mayavadis, and not as logicians, but based on spiritual experience and increasing devotion. So the experience that we have by performing devotional service, that's irrefutable. It's not an irrefutable logic. It's beyond logic. It's fact. So similarly, hearing about Krishna in Vrindavan as spoken by Uddhava, and even to live in Vrindavan as they're doing, temporarily or on a longer term basis, to do it with any quality, it takes this kind of shraddha. And that's enhanced by Vaishnava behavior, taking advantage fully of all the facilities of Vrindavan Dham and the books. Osoba Vidura, King Indra, his honor having been insulted, poured water incessantly on Vrindavan, and thus the inhabitants of Raja, the land of cows, were greatly distressed. But the compassionate Lord Krishna saved them from danger with his pastime umbrella, the Govardhan Hill. In the third season of the year, the Lord enjoyed the central beauty of the assembly of women by attracting them with his pleasing songs in an autumn night brightened by moonshine. Purport. Before leaving the land of cows, Vrindavan, the Lord pleased his young girlfriends, the transcendental gopis, in his rasa-lila pastimes. Here Uddhava stopped his description of the Lord's activities. But rather abruptly, it ends there, only mentioning the rasa dance, not telling anything about it or anything further. And then he begins, as we hear the next chapter, Uddhava said, Lord Krishna then went to Mathura, and he killed Kamsa and so on, and he tells all the other pastimes with Rukmini and Dwarka and so on. But each of these verses can be looked at and appreciated very much. Prabhupada mentions, we read, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they have a special inclination to Vrindavan. And in the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada writes about Radhakund, he says that actually this place is only understandable to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So many devotees come to Vrindavan who are not only Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but actually Vrindavan was developed by the six Goswamis, the major temples in the beginning. So they really understand Vrindavan worship Rupa Goswami, it's not Goswami, the others who were sent here by Lord Chaitanya to excavate the lost pastime places and write books here. So the real Vrindavan way of life was created by Lord Chaitanya and his followers. And even if we're not living here in Vrindavan, when we preach Krishna consciousness around the world, that's what we're preaching. The Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding of Krishna in Vrindavan. In this 8th chapter of Madhyalila, after Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, they spoke for 10 days, we get a little bit of it. And it seems after their most, at least in the book, after their most intense discussions, then they meet another time. And almost in a lighter way, because the talks were getting so thick, it was like the body could hardly stay in the material world, the way they were talking. So they talk in a simpler way, with a little question and answer dialogue. And Lord Chaitanya asks questions and Ramananda Roy answers them quickly, and then he asks another question quickly. And you see the exclusivity of Radha Krishna worship from Ramananda Roy, which is just what Lord Chaitanya wants to hear and what Krishnadas Kaviraj wants to tell us, what Prabhupada wants to tell us, and what we want to tell the people of the world. Like Prabhupada, at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he quotes this Gita Mahatmya, let there be one God, Krishna, let there be one scripture, Bhagavad Gita, which is Krishna's book. Let there be one mantra, Hare Krishna mantra, and let there be one work, devotional service after Krishna. So, when we preach in the Western world, this cannot be presented always so bluntly, so that it may look sectarian. But we do want to explain the science of Krishna and and come to this point. At least those who and develop faith and want to understand Krishna consciousness, they will want to come to this point of understanding God beyond His majesty and in His most attractive, all attractive form, as the beloved cowherd boy of Vrindavan. So in that dialogue, Lord Chaitanya says, who is the richest person? Ramananda Roy says, whoever has love of Krishna is the richest. Much richer than any person, any multi-billionaire person has love of Krishna. What a great, he called him a capitalist, what a great wealth to have. What is the best education? Best education is to know about Krishna. Who's the most famous person? Most famous person is the glory of Krishna. What are the best songs to sing? Songs about love of Krishna. So in that way, everything is... what is the best topic of meditation? Radha Krishna. He answers unequivocally in those terms, much to Lord Chaitanya's pleasure. And so we should also, in our own lives, when we come to Vrindavan, intensify our worship like that, specify our worship. It's natural to do it here, but in the West it tends to get spread out, diluted, and distracted. So we get this spiritual focus very sharp, just like getting a picture sharp in the camera lens. And then we go back to the West and get westernized and hit with so many mundane vibrations, and we may after a while get a little out of focus. But if we remember and chant and hear and live properly in association with devotees, that needn't happen. At least while we're here, we should be making the focus sharp. So, I stop for anyone want to make some questions or discussion.
You were discussing a little bit about following in the footsteps of the residents in Vrindavan. Of course, this is recommended in different places like Nectar Devotion and Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, it's understood that if we actually want to qualify ourselves to enter into Goloka Vrindavan or enter into Krishna's pastimes, that we have to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. So, how can we begin to do that without, you know, without imagining ourselves in some unauthorized way? How can we begin that process?
Well, at any rate, nothing should be imitated, but it can naturally develop, and you can help yourself. So, if you find it, this kind of attraction to the Krishna topics, then that should be developed. Because even in Krishna consciousness, we get exposed to many incarnations of the Lord in Srimad Bhagavatam and many deities and so on. So, if we want, that's the whole thing, it's all desire. So if we want to develop our attraction to Krishna in Vrindavan, Radha Krishna, then we should do so. So, and you're asking how to do that. So you can especially read Krishna book, Bhagavad Gita, 10th canto. As Prabhupada says even, that we don't really want to worship the other forms of Krishna, like Narayan, but we want to worship Krishna, the beautiful boy with the bluish hue, holding the flute, and so on. So Prabhupada encourages that we may do that. Worship Radha Krishna. And try to understand that this is there. In chanting Hare Krishna, we can understand that it means Radharani, it means Krishna, and so on. Of course, you're doing the ideal thing. You're living in Vrindavan, so that's very good. And then, this is a way to begin to hear all the different pastimes of Krishna and the different rasas and become attracted. Because whatever your rasa is, you still love everyone. The gopis love the parents of Krishna. The parents love the gopis, and everybody loves everybody else in Vrindavan. So develop your attraction for all the Vrajabhasis and Krishna. In this way, you can begin and be guided by the spiritual master in your individual inquiry and progress. I read about this for the first time in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya when I was a typist in 1967, how the way to enter Goloka Vrindavan is by following one of the residents of Vrindavan in the particular mood that attracts you. So I wrote to Prabhupada and asked him what did it mean. Because he wasn't freely trying to instigate us to practice this, but it was in his book. So he wrote me back that this will happen naturally. Do not inquire into it at this time. So that was an example of an individual instruction to a disciple who makes an inquiry. In that case, my inquiry wasn't wrong, but it was premature. So he said, don't bother about it now. So I didn't bother about it. But I did what he said to do. Just go on serving with some idea that this will happen at the right stage. So the spiritual master, as in everything, is important to guide us in that. How to go further, when to go further. But the basic idea is to do things which will nourish your attraction to Krishna. Even beginners can be encouraged. People would ask Prabhupada sometimes, oh, there are so many deities, is it all right if I have a special attraction for Jagannath, or if I have a special attraction for Lord Chaitanya? Prabhupada would encourage them. Hare Bol.
I am an Shanti from Maskar.
Oh.
Hope after some time to meet with you tomorrow.
He'll talk with you. You want to see him?
Yeah. Just thinking about the Bhagavatam discussion this morning in relationship to this point, that you were stressing that it doesn't happen automatically, we have to endeavor for it. And Raganuga is also described as part of sadhana bhakti. So it seems that it's also a cultivation.
Mm.
Sometimes it's presented that, you know, we just go about our devotional service, never really think about it, and then
one day all of a sudden.
Uh-huh.
So there is suitable practice. There's a suitable practice. Just give some example. Like, we do so many devotional services, we may have no concept, and what I was talking about an earlier week about an occupational service. So then that may occur to us, that actually I want to be a writer in Krishna consciousness, and that for so many reasons I think I want to develop this. So then you start practicing that. So you've come to an advanced stage in your occupational development, that you know what you want to do, and you maybe have some ability to do it, but now you intensify and intensely practice. Out of all the different services you've selected, and now you've... But it just doesn't happen that, oh, I want to be a writer, and then all of a sudden you're at the ultimate perfect stage. As in Symptoms of Surrender, you do what's favorable and you avoid what's unfavorable. It may even be that you avoid... Usually we think of that, avoid what's unfavorable, smoking cigarettes and things like that. But it may also mean things that are within Krishna consciousness, but they're not favorable for you. So in that way we become someone, try to specialize and develop. But never in a sense that, I found my specialty, now I don't need to chant Hare Krishna anymore. But the basic activities, chanting, hearing, they go on always, even in the liberated condition. We read that last time we met in one of those books, Shikshastikam or Prema Vibhar. But even your chanting may turn in a different, in a special direction, or your reading.